You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Donald Trump is obviously going through some stuff about the Iran nuclear deal at the moment, wants to get rid of it. That was a main campaign platform in 2016, and he's attempting to follow through. What has come to light is that his aides have been outed as hiring an Israeli private security firm to dig up dirt on former Obama administration employees who organized the deal in the first place. And there's suspicion, and I should stress this as much as possible, suspicion that people, dignitaries like John Kerry and UK Foreign Minister Philip Hammond and all the other P5 representatives possibly could have been suspect too. There's also, again, really stressing this, suspicion,
please,
and please don't hate me, any pro-Israel supporters out there, but Benjamin Netanyahu may have been involved in this scandal.
Sounds like a bit of speculation.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do with this piece is I'm not only going to talk through this story, we're also going to talk through what exactly the Iran deal is, because there's a lot of crap going around at the moment, so I kind of want to set the record straight on exactly what it is without getting too much dogma or opinion put in there. And also we're going to talk about exactly why this is a big deal and what the implications are for it if it does go through, and what the implications are for it if it doesn't, and why Donald Trump's doing this.
Sweet. Should I hit the button?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
The United States Republican Party has stood against the Iran nuclear deal since it was first proposed in 2015 and spent many of the Obama years pummeling him for his seemingly soft approach to a country they claim to be a rogue state. This culminated in a letter being sent by junior Republican Senator Tom Cotton in 2015, along with 46 other senators, to the Iranian government, explicitly saying that once President Obama left office, they would do everything in their power to scrap the agreement if they got into the White House. To refresh our memories, here is the junior Republican senator from Arkansas explaining why Republicans communicated independently with Iran.
Right now, I and most every other senator is focused on stopping Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. And that's why it's so important that we communicated this message straight to Iran, because they're not hearing it from Geneva. And remember, this is not a parliamentary democracy. The Islamic Revolution of Iran has been killing Americans, hundreds of Americans, for 35 years in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Saudi Arabia. Well, they kill Jews around the world.
This letter was not only an attack on the Obama administration and the allies who signed the agreement, but was one of the first public expressions of Tea Party Republicans' diehard support for Israel. Now that the Republicans are in the White House, response to the Iran nuclear deal has been mixed. US admirals and generals have stated support for the Iran deal, as have moderate Republicans. Both maintain that the deal is critical in retaining peaceful relations with a major Middle East power, as well as keeping positive foreign policy relations with allies who fear Donald Trump's isolationist rhetoric would threaten cooperation with unpredictable actors. However, aides to Donald Trump have now been outed after working with an Israeli private intelligence agency to orchestrate a dirty ops campaign against Obama administration figures who negotiated the deal. The extraordinary scheme designed to discredit the deal primarily targeted the top national security advisors for Obama and former Vice President Joe Biden, but investigators dug through the history of pro-deal journalists, notable Iranian-Americans, and Iran-friendly lobbyists to find any evidence that may discredit the nuclear deal. According to an anonymous Israeli source to the Observer newspaper, the logic behind the operation was to discredit the deal as much as possible to make it easier for Trump to pull out of it with minimal opposition when the May 12th deadline for renewal arrives. They also alleged that this scheme was given the green light during Trump's recent visit to Israel. Although it has been confirmed that the information and the plan given to the Israeli private investigators was supplied by Trump administration representatives, it's unclear how far this goes. Many fear former Secretary of State John Kerry, former UK Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond, and many other signatories to the deal were targeted too. It's also unknown to what extent Israeli President Netanyahu was aware of the operation. This scheme represents a troubling maneuver in American politics that almost recalls the Nixon days of covert intelligence gathering that eventually forces resignation. However, to see these tactics being delegated to foreign firms and then used in the context of foreign policy negotiations is totally unprecedented. Yet it could also represent a troubling window into how Republicans are going to tackle foreign policy issues that have been long-standing ideological talking points during the Tea Party years. To give full context, I need to go back and explain exactly what the Iran deal is, and to do that, here is an extended description of what the deal entails, given by a Wall Street Journal report in 2015 that breaks the deal down into five key points.
Number one, Iran's uranium stockpile. Uranium is the key ingredient necessary in order to operate a nuclear program. The deal requires Iran to give up 97% of its enriched uranium, taking its stockpile from 10,000 kilograms down to just 300 kilograms. That's much less than what's needed to fuel one nuclear weapon, although Iran maintains the capacity to increase the stockpile quickly. Number two, uranium enrichment. Uranium comes in different levels of enrichment. A purity of 90% is what's needed to make a weapon. Per the deal, Iran can still produce a modest amount of uranium enriched at low levels, just 3.67%. And if Iran abides by the deal, enrichment is limited in this way for 15 years. Number three, reduction of centrifuges. Centrifuges are the machines used to enrich uranium. Iran has to give up 2/3 of its centrifuges. Some 19,000 used for enrichment need to be reduced to about 5,000. Iran can also have 1,000 more for research and development. So what this means is, if Iran abides by the deal, for the next decade, it will take Iran at least 12 months to produce enough fuel for a nuclear weapon. And to make sure it doesn't cheat, there will be number four, inspections. UN inspectors will be allowed to monitor nuclear and other sites, including military ones, but Iran can challenge requests for access. The inspectors need to provide a basis for concern about undeclared nuclear activity. Any Iranian challenge could delay inspections for up to 24 days. Critics say that could be enough time for Tehran to remove evidence it was carrying out banned activities. So what does Iran get for accepting all of this? Number five, sanctions relief. The US, the European Union, and the United Nations will relieve many energy, economic, and financial sanctions against Iran that have been crippling the country's economy. Sanctions will likely lift early next year if Iran complies with the principal requirements in the deal. This is great news for Iran's 82 million people, as it's expected to massively boost the economy, increase trade, and bring new investment into the country.
The deal was signed by all P5 nations, Germany and the European Union, and was incorporated into international law by the UN Security Council. Essentially, it was designed to be a temporary deterrent in exchange for greater economic openness with the rest of the world. This was a deal that majorly benefited all P5 powers. Russia saw Iranian nuclear armaments as detrimental to their interests in the Middle East. China grew uncomfortable with the prospect of another nuclear power arising so close to their territory and their sphere of influence in Central Asia. Meanwhile, the NATO power saw the deal as being key in preventing an arms race, exacerbating the three-way proxy war between Iran, Israel, and Saudi Arabia, and further destabilizing the Middle East. However, Israel has been fiercely vocal in their opposition. Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu has spoken in front of the UN and the US Congress about the risk of Iranian nuclear capabilities repeatedly since the 1990s. And in 2015, when the deal was announced, he pulled no punches.
In the coming decade, the deal will reward Iran, the terrorist regime in Tehran, with hundreds of billions of dollars. This cash bonanza will fuel Iran's terrorism worldwide, its aggression in the region, and its efforts to destroy Israel, which are ongoing. Amazingly, this bad deal does not require Iran to cease its aggressive behavior in any way. And just last Friday, that aggression was on display for all to see. While the negotiators were closing the deal in Vienna, Iran's supposedly moderate president chose to go to a rally in Tehran. And at this rally, a frenzied mob burned American and Israeli flags and chanted, "Death to America, death to Israel."
Netanyahu's outrage against the deal is one that represents a long-standing Israeli foreign policy that is primarily concerned with the territorial integrity of Israel and the territories they claim. With Iran sponsoring Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon, Netanyahu's primary concern comes with weakening those groups as much as possible by limiting Iran's movements in Israel's neighbours and occupied lands. Yet, from the position of the NATO powers and Russia, to include provisions like that would further alienate Iran and would give Saudi Arabia much more political clout in the region. Furthermore, to give Saudi Arabia, a known sponsor of jihadist groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIL, more political clout would not only embolden extremist Wahhabi movements around the region, but would also force Iran to abandon the agreement and start building weapons in response to a Saudi expansion of influence. If that happened, it could risk a new war. In a sense, the P5 viewed Iran as the least worst state sponsor of terrorism in the region. And considering that Iranian-sponsored groups like Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis have all successfully engaged in official political negotiations, as opposed to ISIS or Al-Qaeda, it's no surprise that the P5 have foregone targeting Iran's foreign policy initiatives around Israel and its neighbours. And now that we have understood the clash between Israel and the P5 on the Iran deal, we can understand why Trump and his wing of the Republicans are so hell-bent on destroying it. American political parties, both left and right, target a base of voters to get elected, and for a long while, the Iran deal was vigorously opposed by the Republican base of cultural evangelicals and the Tea Party voters. For these groups, Christian Zionist ideas play a huge role in foreign policy, as seen by the number of major evangelical figures who regularly call on support for Israel from a theological standpoint, including Pat Robertson, Franklin Graham, Jerry Falwell Jr., and Paula White. For Republicans to seemingly turn their back on Israel in the eyes of their voter base would be a political suicide, particularly after Republicans fought so hard against it during the 2016 election. Much like the debate around Obamacare, the promise of repeal for the Iran nuclear deal is key to their platform. So now we come back to Trump's operation of digging dirt on former Obama administration members. It's too early to tell whether or not these tactics will have legal implications, adding to the mounting prosecutions against US President. But as former Obama National Secretary advisor and target of the operation, Ben Rhodes, stated, digging up dirt on someone for carrying out their professional responsibilities in their positions as White House officials is a chillingly authoritarian thing to do. If this sets a precedent for the Trump administration when it comes to delivering on Obama-era Republican talking points, it could both damage America's reputation overseas and set a dangerous precedent for future administrations in decades to come.
Back on BFM, George, do you want to just outro that one for
us,
Connor?
Yeah, so just pointing out to that sources used there for research included Haaretz, which is the kind of more liberal, less Zionist paper in Israel. Also used Al Jazeera, also used official sources from Benjamin Netanyahu and the White House. And also want to say, guys, look out for May the 12th, mark it in your calendars, because that's when the deal runs out. So it's make or break, May the 12th.
Saturday, is it?
Yep, Saturday. So, yeah, if you're out on Saturday evening, have a look at your phone, because this deal falling through might mean another war in the Middle East, possibly. So, yeah, we'll see.
Wow, May the 12th. All right.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.